Good morning, everyone. My name is Lucas Crawford, and I am going into the ninth grade. A short time ago, I was hesitant to speak before you all on this Sunday because I did not feel compelled to. But I felt later on that God gave me an important message to share with you all, and thus here I am. I'd like to start off by letting you all know of an important step in my faith, boldness. Most of us here find much difficulty being outward and open about our faith in Jesus Christ and our belief in the superiority of the Lord's standards above those of this world. I am joyful to say that by the grace of God and the courage He has granted me that I do not have this difficulty. At school, I am probably known most for my openness about biblical truths, even the most controversial topics. You see, I wasn't always that open about my beliefs. In fact, there was a time not too long ago in which at school I never spoke at all about my faith in Christ because I was afraid of the potential for social awkwardness, an issue my friend Matthew Chertosovich spoke of in his sermon at the last Youth Sunday. The term speaks for itself. But in the last year, the Lord has equipped me with courage to speak biblical truths and the gospel adamantly, unapologetically, and without doubt. Occasionally, I am so uninhibited that I fail to speak the truth in love, which is something I have to work on. But nonetheless, my ability to share my faith with others has increased dramatically in the past year. Whenever I speak here, I usually call on you, the congregation, to do something to apply the message. This sermon is no different. Here's my call to action this time. Be a tenacious Christian. I know strange vocabulary, but bear with me. Synonyms of tenacious are determined, unrelenting, and steadfast. A tenacious Christian is outgoing, irremovable, speaking the truth in love and not measuring, engaging their preaching and practicing of the word by how society views it, but by what is pleasing to God, however controversial that may be. 2 Corinthians 10:4 to 5 is, "For the weapons of our warfare are not physical, but are mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ." A follower of Christ is to go out into their surroundings and share and practice one's faith in the Lord, regardless of fears and social repercussions. Instead of waiting for a situation to share your faith, share it before something happens. Instead of waiting maybe for someone to come to you, you could go to them. Maybe don't just pray for a miracle in someone's life. You could be a facilitator or a catalyst for that miracle if God wills it. And truth be told, being a true Christian oftentimes means standing for, saying, and doing things that aren't culturally acceptable or politically correct. People aren't always going to agree with you, and if everyone does agree with you, that actually means you are conforming to the pattern of the world, which, albeit easy, is a sinful one. Fear of being judged by man for standing for Christ often prevents us from doing great things for the Lord's glory. Christians around the world are executed for proclaiming the gospel and fear not death the way we, in our much safer environment, so fear mere human judgment. However, the trying times we are in will eventually force everyone in the world to pick one of two sides, true Christian or non-Christian. There will be no one in between. It seems as if every trial, from daily struggles to legal dilemmas to massive international crises, pushes faith into the shadows. We cannot in good conscience allow such to happen. We must assert with every ounce of our being that God is still good and His ways and His alone are still true. We must step out into the light as Christians. And as it is said in Matthew 10:27, "What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. And what is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the rooftops." And God will be with us as we do so every step of the way. God bless you all, and thank you for having me today.
everyone. My name is Matthew Tredesavit. I'm heading into the 10th grade, and I just wanted to share a little bit about how God has been fixing me recently. So I wanted to start out this talk with something called the Serenity Prayer, and I'm sure a lot of you may have heard of it before, but I actually just saw this for the first time a few weeks ago at our student leadership retreat. And it goes, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. So I think that this reoccurring lesson God is trying to get to my head is this theme of judging by the world's standards versus judging by His standards. And maybe some of you are like me, or maybe not, but personally, I often get tied up trying to evaluate my worth based on my ability. Whether it be academic ability, athletic ability, whatever it is, I just find myself trying to judge myself by these different standards. And I always seem to disappoint myself when I fall short of my own expectations, when my abilities don't go as far as I'd hoped, when things don't go as I plan, I start to feel out of control and inadequate. But I believe that God has a better way, and that He's just trying to get me to open my eyes for a start and see what that better way is. So I've heard this verse 1,000 times, but recently, again at our student leadership retreat, it was in a devotional, and it struck me differently this time. So in 1 Samuel 16:7, God says, "Do not look on his appearance, for the Lord sees not as the man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." So already we have this idea of God's standards being different from our standards, how He looks at us differently and how He determines our worth differently. So I might look at my life and I might try to determine my worth by averaging out my successes and failures, but God looks at all of us and He sees a valuable creation with potential. Putting my trust in my abilities is going to let me down, and it's going to even let others down because I fail all the time. So another aspect of the Serenity Prayer that hit me has to do with this idea of perfection. I realize that in some twisted way, I'm striving and maybe even expecting perfection for myself. And while that's straight up just impossible, I also believe that it's in a way prideful, because it's basically a way of saying, I don't need you, God. I can do this on my own. There's no way I'm getting anywhere close to perfection, and the harder I try, the worse it gets. Yet Jesus is right there in front of me, offering His hand, offering grace. So expecting constant success and beating myself up over inadequacies is not only unreasonable, but I believe that it's prideful of me too. But there's also a really cool flip side to these weaknesses. In 2 Corinthians 12:5, Paul says, "I will not boast about myself except about my weaknesses." I think it's super interesting to me that Paul, this big name, super Christian, personally converted by God Himself, he chooses not to boast about all the insanely awesome things he's done, but about his weaknesses. I mean, couldn't he have been like, yeah, I've converted thousands of people and performed miracles and hung out with Jesus' close buddies, but no, he boasts about his weaknesses. On a real quick side note, one of the miracles he actually performed in Acts 20 happened when he was preaching to a meeting of people, and he ends up preaching for a really long time until midnight, and this guy sitting in the window falls asleep and falls 3 stories to his death while Paul is preaching. So then Paul raises him from the dead. So here's hoping that Pastor Jim never has to raise any of us up from the dead. Here at Venice Church. But anyways... Paul continues in 2 Corinthians 12, and he says, "Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan, to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me." So Paul is asking why he has to live with these weaknesses, and I think that the answer God has been communicating to me is that these weaknesses keep me in my place. They keep me in a place where I am in obvious need of Him. Not only are my imperfections inevitable, but they can also be used to God to slap me with the cold reality that I need Him. Paul continues in chapter 13, "Now we pray to God that you will not do anything wrong, not so that people will see that we have stood the test, but so that you will do what is right, even though we may seem to have failed." I think Paul, right here, he's trying to show the clear difference between appearing successful by merit of ability, which is an appearance on the outside, and the true success, which comes in the form of doing the right thing, even when we may feel like we failed. I need to give up false ideas of self-identity, and I need the serenity to accept that shortcomings are inevitable, but that by God's grace, they are not fatal. And I also need courage to get my hands dirty and fix the things in my life that I do have control over, things that I know need to be taken care of if I'm going to live to glorify God. It's kind of like sports. Beating yourself up over losing a game, even one that you know you should have won, it won't help anything. All you can do is keep training and do your best in the next one. Serenity to accept the things I cannot change. It doesn't mean adopting an attitude of complacency. It doesn't mean telling myself that I can't be good enough, so there's no point in even trying. Serenity to accept the things I cannot change. It means admitting that I will lose games along the way, but relying on the forgiveness of Jesus to get me past each failure to the next opportunity. And in between, there's always time to run through more drills or train some more, practice and work out so that I'll be ready for the next time. I cannot expect to be a perfect son, brother, student, friend, leader, athlete, or all-around human being. I can't expect perfection, but I can receive grace for my mistakes, and I can put in my best effort every single time. There's this movie called When the Game Stands Tall, and it tells the story of the De La Salle Spartans high school football team. This team won 151 games in a row. It's a national record. So in the movie, Coach Bob Lattisore, he tells his team, "We're not asking you to be perfect on every play. What we're asking of you, and what you should be asking of each other, is to give a perfect effort from snap to whistle." So again, it's not about perfection. God's grace is a necessity for all of us. And this doesn't mean that we shouldn't give 110%. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 9:24 to run the race in such a way as to get the prize. After losing their first game in 151 before that, the assistant coach tells his players, "Don't let a game define who you are. Our identities are more than our mistakes. Our lives are more than one bad game. And it's not how hard you fall, it's how you get back up." Coach Lattisore says after the streak is broken, "We're going to find out what this team is made of. You've got to decide what you want to be." I've decided that I want to be a player on God's team, and a large part of that is going to be how I handle my weaknesses, just as the Spartans had to figure out how they were going to handle losing the 152nd game of their streak. To be honest, I'm only just realizing these things that have been in front of me from the beginning. I'm still in the process of choosing to adjust my game plan. I'm making and will make mistakes along the way. But God says to me in 2 Corinthians 12:9 through 10, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." Like Paul, I will try to boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses and in insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Thank you.